Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, and somatic body psychotherapist, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel, Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love seminars, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me Relationship System, and the upcoming 30-Day Love Challenge. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. No matter what has happened to us earlier in our life. So today I have the pleasure of speaking with a very knowledgeable therapist, Tracy Rubenstein, a licensed clinical social worker. She has had extensive training and experience working with victims of trauma, not an area that most of us really want to talk about or face, but it is really serious and you need a qualified person to talk to you when you have a problem like that. Originally practicing in New Orleans as a victim services counselor, she provided information, clinical services, referrals, and she often accompanied victims to court. As director of the YWCA Rape Crisis Program in New Orleans, she managed the 24-hour crisis line, the medical advocacy service, outpatient clinical services, staff development, and even grant writing. Then, after the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, she was assistant director for the Metropolitan Center for Women and Children, focused on funding and services for domestic violence, stalking, sexual assault, and human trafficking. And she can provide us with insights into how to most appropriately speak with trauma victims. Currently, Tracy has a private practice in Boca Raton, Florida. So I want to welcome you, Tracy.
Thank you so much, Erica. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so I usually start right away by asking, please tell us about your background. What is your training and education, and what led you to start working with trauma and to even get interested in this area?
Well, I actually began in college. I started volunteering for a domestic violence program. Of course, back then, this was in the 80s, it was called a battered women's program. And I began doing volunteer work. I was very involved with that. And then when I finished college and I moved to New Orleans, I then got involved with a domestic violence program there, and I actually ended up getting a little frustrated with just being on the hotline and just being on call because I wanted to know what happens with people after they call the hotline, and that was what led me into my graduate school experience. I got my master's degree in social work from Tulane University, and then you just described the rest of my career, so... I've been in this field since 1989.
Wow, so you've really been working with it. And what kinds of people have you seen and worked with?
Well, obviously I mentioned the domestic violence program. So back in the day, it was battered women's programs. They were limited to just servicing women and children, but of course our understanding of domestic violence has expanded since then. And so later on, I did also work with men. And then when I was at the Rape Crisis Program, I actually I facilitated the only group in the state of Louisiana that was for men who had experienced any kind of sexual assault or sexual abuse at any point in their lives. So men and women, and the program that I oversaw, of course, served children. I did not personally provide services to children, and my practice now is focused on adults. So anybody who has experienced any kind of relationship violence, any kind of sexual assault or sexual abuse at any point in their lifetime, and including people who have experienced stalking either by a stranger or by someone they know. And I was involved with bringing a human trafficking grant to Louisiana, and through that had the occasion to learn a lot about human trafficking and work with people who had been trafficked.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing what you've dealt with. I've seen a lot of clients who, as I'm going through their history or working with them, they reveal that they have had some kind of real deep trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
mm-hmm.
very common, and a lot of people don't even share about it.
It's true.
So
most
I have a
people
question.
Actually, Most people don't actually don't even recognize or call it trauma, and statistically, the prevalence of sexual abuse, sexual assault is very high in our country. You know, 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys by the time they're 18. You know, those are really high numbers. And the lifetime prevalence for women of being in an abusive relationship or in a sexual assault, experiencing a sexual assault, is like 1 in 3. So whether people talk about it or not, it's actually happening quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And I know that for men, it's harder for them to even tell anybody. So the statistics
it takes a lot of courage for anyone to acknowledge having been victimized in any way. There's such a social stigma for men around sexual abuse. Obviously, it exists for women and girls too, but for men and boys, it's even more powerful. So it takes a lot of courage to make that first phone call or to tell that secret. In my experience working with men, once they have gotten over that first hurdle of saying it for the first time and saying, I think I need some help with this or it's bothering me, the process then, once they've said it really is such a hard part. And after that, they're very open to healing and open to dealing with it. And they feel such relief after telling someone who listens and doesn't blame them and doesn't ridicule them and doesn't make a joke out of it. And then the healing process has already started right then and there.
Yeah, you're talking about another thing we don't talk about very much, which is shame, that they feel tremendous shame about it, as if they could have done something when very often there was nothing they could do.
Right, well, there's two parts to that, in my view. One is cultural and societal values that tend to be victim blaming. And we're all kind of subject to that. And some of us take it in and take it to heart more than others. But that is definitely a source of shame, where our culture blames victims and says, well, you shouldn't have worn that, or you shouldn't have been there, or you shouldn't have done that, or what did you think was going to happen, and those kinds of things. And then there's another piece of it that is really the psychology of trauma, which is we as organisms seek to learn from our experiences. And so if we have a bad experience, our brain is evolved to look at that situation and say, well, what about this situation should I avoid in the future so that this doesn't happen again? And what that turns into is I shouldn't have done X, Y, Z, or I shouldn't have been in that place. And as long as I avoid that, this will never happen again. And that becomes self-blame. That becomes shame when it's really based in a very deeply rooted psychological and biological need to avoid pain and injury and to seek safety and continued life. So one of the things that we deal with in trauma treatment is to separate those things out. Like part of the response that people go through in trauma is just, this is your brain doing what it's supposed to do. You're supposed to the brain is trying to keep the entire organism alive. Now, that can go a little too far, and that becomes blaming, oh, I shouldn't have done that, and I should have known better, and that kind of thing. And then we want to interrupt that thought pattern and put it back to, I'm doing the best that I can. It's not my fault. I can't be responsible for someone else's behavior or someone else's choices and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm really reacting to what you're saying. It's incredible. I had two thoughts about that. One is a parent whose child suffers abuse and the parent feels I should have done something when there was nothing they could do. And anyway, talk about that a little.
Well, I had the privilege of working with a lot of parents in what we called a caregivers group. And this was for anyone who was in any way a caregiving adult to a child who had been sexually assaulted or sexually abused. So it could be parents, grandparents, or anyone living in the home that was an adult. And universally, what these parents were experiencing was tremendous guilt over the role of I am supposed to be protecting this child, whether it's my child or my niece or my granddaughter or whatever, and I have failed because this happened to my child. And that is a way of blaming oneself, again, taking responsibility for someone else's behavior. You cannot control the perpetrator's behavior. You can do things to reduce risk, but prevention is sort of a misnomer. We can't always prevent things from happening. We can reduce risk. And parents can make choices that reduce their children's risk. But once something has happened, it is not the non-offending parent's fault for that happening. And the guilt and the shame actually gets in the way of the whole family healing. So what we would focus on with someone who's feeling a lot of guilt and shame about their child's victimization is to talk about that line between what can you be responsible for and what can't you be responsible for. Because when we focus on the things that we can control, the things we can be responsible for, we experience empowerment. And we experience a sense of effectiveness and agency in our lives. And when a child is seeing their loved one, their caregiver, experiencing empowerment, the child experiences it as well. And so it's healing, you know, from multiple angles for that child who has also experienced the assault. They have to go through their own healing process, but also watching their parent experience, oh, look, my mom is not blaming herself and my mom is it empowered? That's a very helpful role model.
Wow, that's a whole area that I really have never heard anyone talk about before.
It's painful for parents when their child has been abused in any way. And my heart goes out to every parent who's ever experienced that. I'm a parent. I understand, you know, I can imagine what that would feel like. And it's so important that parents or caregivers have someone they can talk to who is non-judgmental, who's supportive and accepting, and can help them work their way out of that tangled and confusing time of what did I do wrong, what should I have done differently, I should have known, all that kind of stuff, and work towards empowerment because that's best for the entire family system.
Wow. Yeah, such important information for people to have, to
mm-hmm.
reach out to someone who can support them. But there was another thing I didn't want to forget when you were talking about what happens to a person that's had trauma and they don't want to take that risk, they lower their risk. So talk for a moment about how that affects their future relationships. Because if they're avoiding risk, they don't want to get too close to another person. They'd be real careful who they get involved with.
Right, right. A very natural, normal response to trauma is to avoid anything that in any way reminds you of the trauma. So, you know, something that looks like or smells like or sounds like or feels like. So that's a normal response to trauma. And at the same time, we can take it too far. So that if a person was in a violent and abusive relationship with a man and they are able to get out of that relationship, then they might go to the extreme of avoiding all men or avoiding all relationships with men. So obviously that's going to make that person's world pretty small and constricted and not free and joyful. So we want to take that normal, natural response to avoid something that caused pain, and we want to put it into the context of I can be safe no matter where I am and no matter what I'm doing, because safety isn't out there. Safety is inside of me and how I respond to my environment. I can be empowered no matter where I am. So I can be safe going out on a date. I can be safe getting involved in another relationship. I can be aware of potential red flags. In the world of domestic violence and relationship violence, you can Google a number of websites that will show you, you know, 50 red flags of a person that you should not, you know, get involved with, that kind of thing. So we can raise our awareness, and that increases our sense of safety. So for a person who has been hurt in a relationship and is maybe avoiding relationships, is avoiding intimacy, they can be empowered absolutely to feel a sense of safety and know that they can make choices if they're feeling unsafe. They can leave a situation, or they can speak up and use their voice and say what they want or what they don't like. And do that much sooner when they first get that kind of gut feeling or that uncomfortable feeling, and in that way avoid situations where as you get further and further into it, it's harder to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Powerful. So I have a question to ask. Trauma
mm-hmm.
means different to different people. So how do you define trauma, since you've really worked with so many different ways that people are traumatized?
Okay, well, so if I'm defining trauma like, you know, in 10 words or less or something like that, it would be anything that overwhelms a person's ability to cope adaptively. So what do I mean by that? Trauma can be, we call them big T traumas and little T traumas. So a big T trauma are the kinds of things that I think anyone would recognize is trauma, such as a car accident or being in a natural disaster or being sexually assaulted. And little T traumas are the little things that happen in everyday life that very few of us would label trauma in and of itself. But those little T traumas add up. So things like getting into an argument with a coworker, getting stuck in traffic, those are little T traumas. But if we don't address them, they add up and add up and add up and can have a full traumatic effect, like a big T trauma, and need to be dealt with. So it's
that's so interesting because I did a workshop many, many years ago where I talked about little traumas in
mm-hmm.
regards to relationships, little rejections. Mm-hmm. You know, you go out on a few dates and, or you go out on several dates and you keep getting rejected, then you get, like, afraid or, you know,
exactly.
things like that, where if you talked about it and got the counseling, you could figure out maybe you've been going out with the wrong kind of people, maybe there's something you're doing or saying, and, you know, you can handle it, but it becomes a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew
mm-hmm.
that a long
mm-hmm.
time ago. But so the question I have is, doesn't everyone have trauma in their lives?
Sure. Everyone does have trauma in their lives. But depending on how the person experiences it, is how they would define it. And we are very resilient creatures. And we have lots of things that we can do that are healthy ways of coping with trauma. So, for example, if a person is exercising or they're using meditation or they have a hobby that they really enjoy or they love to relax with music or they have close social support, like close friendships, that person can experience a lot of little T traumas in their daily life or even big T traumas and not be devastated by it because they have all this other stuff that's supporting their resiliency, supporting their ability to bounce back. But a person who doesn't have those things, doesn't have good social support, doesn't have a healthy diet, isn't getting enough sleep, isn't taking time to relax and care for their body and taking time to kind of shut off their brain and enjoy something, little T traumas are going to add up very quickly for that person, and big T traumas are going to be immediately devastating. So there's so much that we can do. And yes, we do experience trauma pretty much every day in our life, the little T traumas. But depending on how you're living your life and choices that you're making, you may not recognize them because you may not be experiencing them as little T traumas.
Wow. And I'm thinking as you're talking about retirement that
mm-hmm.
it happened several people that I've known where a man, particularly with men, that has worked all his life and he knew himself as whatever he was in his career, and he got confidence and everything from that, but he didn't build up other kinds of skills and leisure activities. Then he retires, you know, and that's a trauma. And then if he loses his wife or something else happens, it's such a trauma because he doesn't have the resiliency.
Right, right. So he can gain that resiliency. He has some, you know, in this case, it would be do the hard work of go out, build relationships step by step, build activities, you know, try different activities that he thinks he might enjoy until he lands on one or two that he really does enjoy, and then pursue those and make sure that he's eating well. You know, maybe if he was working, he was the, you know, hard worker all that time, maybe he wasn't at home cooking, maybe he doesn't know how to cook, right? So now he has to learn to put healthy food in his body and how to purchase it and how to prepare it. So that person is going to be doing a lot of work in that sense. But it's all about, on a day-to-day basis, enjoying that process. Learning to cook can be a lot of fun. Learning a new hobby can be a lot of fun. The cumulative effect of doing all of that is going to be that person is living a much richer and much more enjoyable life and isn't
mm-hmm.
feeling lonely and isn't experiencing the same kind of physical effects of loneliness and isolation. Because we know that those affect our body, and we know that people who are lonely and isolated do have more physical ailments and aches and pains and that kind of thing. So there's this, you know, it's kind of a snowball effect. The more you do to stay connected and stay active, and stay involved, and it doesn't even matter what the activity is, as long as you find it enjoyable, then you're going to derive really big long-term benefits from it.
As you were talking, I remembered Stephen Levine, who wrote a book, I forget the name of it, something about the tiger. he talked about how animals that have been in a traumatic situation, how they deal with it. After the trauma, mm-hmm. during the trauma, they freeze. But afterwards, they get up and shake their whole body, and they shake it out of their system. So
wow,
I'm picturing people
who yeah.
kind of trauma, doing pounding on
mm-hmm.
pillows, kicking their feet, like having a temper tantrum physically
sure.
to release
sure.
the trauma.
Yeah, and one technique that can be really effective is for someone who has experienced a trauma at like a victim of a violent crime, whether it's a sexual assault or domestic violence or whatever, to have the opportunity, once they're able to experience anger and aren't feeling as afraid of their anger, right, that they might want to take that anger out on a Nerf bat and ball or something like that, or a pillow. It can be a very freeing experience to physically let out anger or fear, and a lot of times it's a combination of those two feelings, and feel like you've taken it from inside your body where it's internalized and externalize it, put it outside your body where now it doesn't control you. It's something that's out there. You can interact with your anger. You can interact with your fear, but it's not controlling. It's not living inside of you. That brings a lot of freedom to people.
And as we're talking about this, I suddenly remembered a situation many, many years ago. I was about to teach at my college, and it was a Saturday night, and I was walking toward my car with a guy. I was on a date, and a gun was pointed at me. A mugging. And I remember for about a year, I just remember it was really lasted about a year. Whenever I walked down the street in Manhattan, I would like shake or cringe if anyone came too close.
Sure.
I've never had a reaction to people on the street in New York for a very long time. Because I didn't know about dealing with it in any way. I don't think I talked to anybody about it, just got over it. But wow. So I have a question
as
about that.
You're saying that.
I experienced that. So what kinds of problems or situations indicate that a person might have experienced trauma and need to resolve it? What would they show?
Right. So you just gave a great example, which is feeling jumpy or easily startled is definitely an indication that person would really benefit from talking with someone. Other things like having trouble sleeping or having difficulty in your relationships or unable to focus or unable to work or physical pain, especially when there's not a medical cause for the physical pain. Some people might be overeating or undereating. Or, of course, abusing any type of substance from nicotine to alcohol to drugs, any of that.
Yeah, so you could pick up on it pretty easily.
Well, yeah, those would be things that people might want to look out for. That, all right, this is an indication that I need to talk to somebody. I'm feeling depressed or I'm crying or I don't want to do any of the things that I used to do. I don't want to go on any more dates or just anything that's disrupting their life, it's disrupting their normal routine that they don't like. That would be the indication of, okay, time to go talk to someone.
Mm-hmm. So another question along that line, is there a lot of techniques for treating trauma? So how does someone know what would be the best treatment for them or what they need?
Right. So people just have so many different preferences, and the good news is there are so many different effective trauma treatments that if you're seeing someone, if you go to your doctor, or you go to a therapist or a psychiatrist, whatever it is, and you just don't feel like it's a good fit, then keep looking until you do feel like it's a good fit, because there's not one right way to treat trauma. I would say at the minimum, any person who is looking for help with trauma, the first thing they need to feel is safety. They need to feel physically safe. So if you're meeting, let's say you're you're trying out a new therapist or a new doctor or whatever, notice how do you feel being in that person's space, in their office? Is it comfortable? Is the temperature okay? Is the lighting okay? Does the person seem interested in you and warm? Are they cool to you? All of that is going to be your indication of how do you feel sitting there talking to them. If you don't feel safe,
another thing,
they're not the right person.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I remember, because I've gotten into body therapy. I received a lot of body mm-hmm. therapy, and that helps to get you down to the issues. It's one way that, you know,
mm-hmm.
by letting go of the physicality, you can get in
mm-hmm.
touch with the emotions. But I remember looking at the therapist, and she had a look of fear in her eyes over some situation I was in, you know, a fight in my marriage or something that was going on, and she had this look of fear, like she didn't feel safe helping me.
Mm.
She
yeah.
got afraid
yeah.
from some, you know, and you need to
right.
have somebody who's okay with it, because if you've had a trauma and they look terrified, that can be scary to you. You don't want to hurt the other person. You know, you have to feel free. So that's something I thought of.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And then once physical safety is established, then most people need to tell their story. They need to say what happened to them, and they need to tell that story in their own way and at their own pace, without being interrupted, without being asked too many questions, because the questions then are the therapist, that's how they want to hear the story. But it's so important for the client to be able to say, this is how I want to tell my story, in the order that I want to tell it, and I'm going to give you these details, but not those details until I'm ready to give you. So that's also another part of the empowerment, is you get to tell your story your way, in your pace. And I would like people to be aware that, you know, a lot of people need to tell their story more than once, and that's okay.
Oh, well, I have
you can
to
tell
respond
it
to
as
that
many
too.
Times as you need to. Hmm?
Because I have had that experience, particularly in the body therapy field, because they're not
uh-huh.
all experienced therapists. They may
right.
elicit emotions, but they're not all qualified therapists on top of it. So I remember telling my situation and the person saying, oh, you've said that too many times already. And I had never told anyone. It was like I needed
mm-hmm.
to talk about it. So it's such a relief to hear you say that. Thank
yeah.
you. I'm sure that it is for people that are able to tell you over and over in their own way. Wow.
Right. And to receive acceptance and non-judgment every time. Every time they
wow.
tell it, it's okay to tell it. And every time that I'm never, ever going to blame them. And I'm never going to tell them that this is what you should have done, and that kind of thing. But to tell that story over and over, however they need to, and know that every single time I'm going to be accepting and kind and gentle in my listening and in my responses. And when they're ready, we'll go to the next step.
Wow, people are so lucky to find someone like you with the sensitivity and the willingness to stay with the process as long as
Thank
it takes.
You. Thank you.
So,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, really. I'm just hearing that. I'm thinking of my own experiences, because I was studying all these body therapies, so I got all kinds of sessions. And some of them
right,
were traumatizing.
Right.
Sessions themselves
mm.
were traumatizing. But I knew
yeah.
better, and I had people to speak to, other therapists, so I could be okay about it. But if you don't
mm-hmm.
have that, you could be traumatized just going to get some help.
It's true. That is a possibility, and that's why I ask people to really pay attention to what your inner wisdom is telling you, whether you call it your gut feeling or your sixth sense or whatever. Listen to yourself. If you don't feel really comfortable with the person in whatever their office environment is, then they're not the right person for you. Keep looking until you find someone that you truly feel comfortable with.
I would just add that sometimes the person who's been traumatized doesn't trust their own feelings. So they stay with someone.
Yeah, especially if there's been chronic abuse, they've actually been taught not to trust their feelings. So really what I'm saying is the treatment of trauma begins that very first moment that you reach out for help and you pay attention. How does the other person respond? It could even be in that first phone call when you're making the appointment.
Wow, you're just saying such valuable things for people to hear. So I have one more question. What if someone had a bad experience a long time ago? Is it ever too late to get help? Is it worth it? Can they heal from it?
Great question, because I think this is something that people really struggle with. There's so much pressure in our society and in our culture to get over it. That was a long time ago. Leave the past in the past, blah, blah, blah. And my response to that would be, it is never too late to get help. If something is bothering you, absolutely seek help. Whether you feel that it's worth it or not is up to you, not up to somebody else. So if you're having any kind of disruption or symptoms in your life that you're not happy with, then if you go and get help and you experience healing, then I would say you're going to find that worth it, because you're not having that pain, or you're not having that symptom, or your relationships are better. But it's still that person's choice. And the flip side is, trauma doesn't go away. It just goes deeper. So if you don't heal it, it's still going to be there. It's still going to be influencing your life, but you're not going to know it. You're not going to understand it. You're just going to be dealing with the effects of it. When you go for treatment of trauma, even if it was 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, doesn't matter how long ago it was, when you bring it to the surface, now you confront it, you face it, you address it, heal it. Who's in control? You are. Trauma's not running your life. You're running your life. And that is the essence of empowerment. That's the opposite of trauma.
Wow, this is amazing what you're talking about. You brought up a memory, another memory I have with a few clients. One is a man that had been working all his life, you know, successful business, and he cheated on wives, and he had the money and all of that. And then he's older, and the sexuality doesn't work as well. He doesn't have as much money. And finally, the trauma from his childhood starts to show up. Like, he could always cover it because he had money, and he would go have an affair with another person, so he didn't have to face whatever those feelings were.
Right.
So I have seen that. Wow.
Right. And so his unresolved trauma was in control of his life through him unconsciously, right? He was making poor choices. And when he finally addressed it, he no longer needed those other behaviors that were causing so much problem. And he addressed it head on, then he can have the life that he really wants.
Except that what happens is the person arrives very depressed, because, you know, they thought they were something else. They thought they were so successful and so cool, you know, and now they're facing like truth about themselves, so they're just depressed. They feel like life is over. I mean, it's something that they just never faced earlier.
Right, right. And a person is not their trauma. They're an actual whole, complete person, and trauma is something that happens to you, but it has to be integrated into your life story, but it isn't your whole being. It maybe is one chapter of your life story, or maybe it's a thread that runs through your life story, but you're still a whole complete person with it or without it. And that, having that relationship with your past, of course, is empowering and freeing and much lighter than feeling like you're burdened by your past and carrying it around, and it's running your life for you. no matter how long ago a trauma was, I believe that, that people can heal. It's never too late. And the process is really going to be the same.
And I see that there are many circumstances where someone keeps that trauma like separate, compartmentalizes it, maybe for 20
mm-hmm.
years. They bring up
mm-hmm.
children, they have a family, they have something that they focus on, and then all of a sudden it resurfaces a long time later. It does happen
right.
with men or women who were in a war zone. Sometimes they come back
mm-hmm.
and they really seem okay for a very long time because they've buried it.
Right,
but,
right. And that's,
so,
you know, that's a survival technique.
Mm-hmm.
And we honor anything that we've had to do to survive. It's what you had to do, and we don't second guess that. And we don't say, oh, I should have done this and I should have done that. Well, you did what you did because you had to. That's what you had to do to survive. But here you are now. And now you can make a different choice.
I love the positive wording. It's a simple shift in the way you think or you talk that can make a huge
mm-hmm.
difference.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy, we're coming
yep.
to the end. So delightful speaking with you. And I'd love
Thank
for
you.
Our listeners to know how they can get in touch with you.
Well, they can reach me through my website, which is s2sboca.com. So that stands for strength to strength. So it's S, the number 2, and the letter S, Boca, BOCA.com. And my phone number is 561-213-7638. That's 561-213-7638.
Well, Tracy, you are doing a tremendous amount of good for a lot of people, and I would love
Thank
more
you.
People to reach out to you so that and therapists and potential clients to understand
yes.
what's possible.
Sure. And I'd be happy if there are therapists who have questions and want to bounce an idea or anything about what I've said, if they want to know more about it, please feel free to contact me.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been delightful.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Erica.
You're welcome. So this is Dr. Erica Goodstone saying goodbye for now, and I hope you will check out my free report at healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, How to Live to 100 and Beyond and Be Healthy and Happy. And if you're ready for love, join the 30-Day Love Challenge. And you can contact me at my website, drericagoodstone.com.